Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
French Connections Monday edition. It is the 14th day of August 2006. Of course, you know who I am. I'm Daryl Bradford Smith, and I'm fighting the bad guys. And we've got a returning guest here. Second time he's been with us on the French Connection. His information last time generated a lot of emails regarding actions that we should try and look into and possibly implement to start taking back our government from the criminals. Now, the two we're going to discuss today is the Equal Access Law and this precinct idea, because these two ideas are real grassroots ideas. They are open to us through the law, and they can have a huge impact if we actually implement these policies correctly. And Jim has spent some time. His name is Jim Condit, by the way. He spent some time over the weekend getting a nice talk about this kind of sorted out in his mind, so I'm going to bring him up right now. Jim, are you with me?
Yes, how are you doing, Daryl?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for coming back on. And
well, thanks for having us.
Well, you know, like I told you before, that we did generate a great deal of interest in this particular subject because, you know, one of the things that talk radio has been doing, and I don't think I'm talk radio, I'm a political movement, but what they failed to do is come up with solutions. Many of the shows that people listen to are a bunch of fear mongers, in my view, and many of them are disinformation, in my view. And they're rarely talking about practical, on the ground, boots on the ground kind of things that can be done to stop this slide America's in. One of the things you came up with is really a wonderful grassroots idea. It is we're able through the law to put our message out anywhere in the country if we're running for specific offices, and actually say everything without hindrance or without restriction. Could you give us details about that?
Sure. And yeah, there is. You know, there's two practical courses of action that we've come up with that are within the law, constitutional, you know, peaceful in the good sense, not peaceful in surrender, but peaceful in taking sensible, you know, constitutional and action that is in the political and the persuasion realms, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we're going to emphasize one today because it is a big subject, but it leads to the other, which is the, you know, there's two things. There's getting the message out, and then there's organizing people to take back the country. And let me say that I'm 100% in favor of all the radio shows and the internet, and this, thanks to the internet, and thanks to radio shows like you're doing, and that now I know I can refer my family, friends, and people that I can reach to go and start listening to your broadcasts, downloading them, putting them on disc, passing them around, listening to them while they...
How many have you listened to, Jim, just for... Have you listened to a lot of them?
What I've been doing is I've been walking for the sake of health. I'm in my 50s now, and you know, for various reasons, it's good to do some exercise. So I've been downloading about one a day for the past 9 or 10 days, whatever it's been since I've known about what you're doing, and I've been listening to one a day as I'm walking. So I've turned my walk from something I kind of dreaded into something I look forward to. And also I've listened to a few while driving. You know, I have one of these CD players that you can plug into your, like a tape plugs in and it hooks into a little CD and it plays through your radio. So these are some ideas that people might, you know, might use to listen to your programs and other good programs.
Let me ask you, which ones did you find most helpful, just for reference of people who are have not dug through the archives?
Well, I think everyone should dig through the archives, and I will say that I was very interested in I learned more of it in meat that I had known before was the ones with Dr. Muhammad.
He's not a doctor, but Muhammad Rafik, yeah.
Muhammad Rafik and his two on the Khazars, the Kingdom of the Khazars, and filling in some of the history from the 7th century onward to the Middle Ages and so forth.
Yeah.
But then Eustace Mullins I listened to. I haven't listened to the Mike Piper ones yet. Some of that other stuff, some of the stuff, of course, I'm familiar with because I really first woke up that we were fighting, who were fighting mainly, namely the top Zionist Jewish faction in 1976.
Yeah.
But even then, it took me a few years to read and to kind of think, is this really the way we should go, and is this right? Because the brainwashing is so great, you know.
Yes, it is.
So all the things were good, and the ones where you do on your own are good. So, but I think we have a qualitative different and complementary piece of information here in this, in how to reach, because we need to keep expanding our influence in depth and slowly, but in depth on the internet and through radio programs that we control. But what this is, it's kind of like using the last lull that there is at the moment in operation to reach millions of people, as we have done. What I'm talking to you about here, I've done. I'm not just saying, gee, this would be a nice theory we could try. I've done it, and I'm hoping that 50 or 60 other people by the 2008 are doing it in different cities in the United States, and that is to use the reasonable access law, as it's called, to put radio ads on the big AM, FM, and TV stations, the ones that are licensed by the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission.
Now, what in your view, is the percentage of stations that are FCC regulated? I mean, we're certainly not on the internet, but,
Cable,
but all of the ones who have a public airwaves to be dealt with have to have an FCC license, don't they?
Well, not cable. Cable does not. Satellite does not. But every station that just people are pretty much familiar with, all your local TV stations, all of your national ABC, CBS, NBC, all your radio stations, AM and FM, are all FCC licensed.
And they have to stick with their fee schedule as well, right? I mean, they can't be saying, "Oh, well, we don't like you, so we're going to double the charge."
No, that's right. In fact, they have to go with the, and we'll get into that. They have to go with the lowest charge that they charge any business any time in the year during the last 60 days before an election. So this law is incredibly geared to the little guy, and it allows us to hit. But so let's just go through a few sections. In fact, first I was thinking, Daryl, if you don't mind, I wanted to play one of these ads. I thought I might play three throughout the show because people say, well, is this really worth doing? And I whether or not everyone agrees with every last nuance and every last...
Well, we did talk about this, and some of my research has actually added some names to that list, but it's still right on the money with who's doing what. So
yeah, I have three different types of commercials, but I just want to get to the idea for people that this, they can, here's the only point here. They can't censor what you put on. That's the point. And that is the for political candidates only. So let's play one of these, and people get an idea of how dynamic is the type of message you can get out. If that's okay, so here
go
we go.
For it.
Ready? Okay.
Bush equals Kerry, and Kerry equals Bush. Both are members of the top level secret society Skull and Bones. Both are slaves to the organized Jewish lobby in the USA and the evil Sharon leadership in Israel. Both will institute a draft of our young people. Both will keep America in the Middle East. This is Jim Conda, Jr. Listen this Sunday, October 17th at 10 p.m. to WKRC 55 a.m. to find out what is really happening in the United States and the world right now. The ruling elite behind Bush-Kerry also plan a second horrible terrorist attack on U.S. soil. You will learn more on this hour program about what will happen in 2005 than from all 10 million plus hours of programming on the major radio and TV networks in this coming year, and how we the people can take control of our country again. Listen this Sunday night at 10 p.m. to WKRC 55 a.m. Find out more at realnews247.com. That's realnews247.com, paid for by Jim Conda Jr. for Congress.
That is...
Hey, Daryl?
Yeah, that's wonderful, Jim. You know...
Yep.
Now, what happens is that the first thing that hits you right away is that no one's ever heard an ad like that on mainstream radio or television ever.
Yep. Right. That, basically, that's correct because, it just so happened. Other people have used this for various issues. I've known about it since the early 80s, but again, we need more people with advertising skills and things to get this around more thoroughly. But so what notice a few things that ad did. One is we found out later that not only does this cover a 1 minute commercial, in other words, but it also can cover an hour program, Daryl, as long as that station sells to other businesses. In other words, the rule is this: if you're a political candidate for federal office, and I'll go over these criteria in a minute, Congress, Senate, President, maybe a few others, then the station has to give you the same break or reasonable access to their airwaves as they do any other business. So whether it's the original mattress factory that we have here in Cincinnati, whether it's Coca-Cola, if they're selling ads to businesses, they have to give you the same deal. So some of these stations, not all of them, but some of them will have hour programs they sell on Sunday night. WKRC here in Cincinnati sells, I guess their listenership is not great, and that's a drawback in a way even for us. But from 6 p.m. or from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. on Sunday night, they sell our programs to a real estate company, to a chiropractor who's been on here for 13 years who does a great show. So what we did is we found, well, they have to give us an hour too. So we went ahead, and if you'll notice on that radio ad, we told the people to listen to the radio show. We also told them, and this is the more important thing, to go to a website, Real News 24/7, where we linked other information. We have a lot of information.
What kind of bump did you get in your traffic?
When we did this and tracked it, and I need to know more about tracking websites, but in 2002, when we ran our first one, we had in 2 weeks, basically, we had 22,000 separate individual visits, meaning different people visiting, not necessarily, maybe not, that doesn't mean every web page views, but how many different people came in.
Yep.
I was hoping for a million, quite frankly, because in 2002 we asked people on some of the ads, email to everyone you know and tell them to come to realnews247.com, but we got 22,000. My brother said, who's in advertising, said that's really considered excellent for any new campaign. And unfortunately, one of the drawbacks of this is you're basically talking to people the way we did it over talk radio, who are riding in their car. And they're basically riding to and from work or to the store. They're looking to be entertained. They're not looking to jump into action. And, of course, what we were telling them was 100% against the brainwashing that they did. So I guess all things considered, 22,000 was good. Something must have happened in the last 4 years, Daryl, between what we did and what you did and what a lot of other people did, when you now have 30 to 70% of the people believing that 911 is a cover-up of some kind. And also you have really quite a bit of dissatisfaction now with at least what the state of Israel is doing. So things are changing, and I think they're due to all of these little efforts, even though the Clear Channel Radio Company, which runs about 1,400 major radio stations in the United States, they are just 24 hours a day warmongering and putting forth the Zionist Jewish agenda. You know.
Well, have you looked into in your research just how completely they do control our airwaves?
Oh, it's complete. It's just about complete. It's just about complete on the major television and radio stations. But this is where you hit the people who aren't awake yet. In other words, the reason for this reasonable access radio ad strategy is to reach hundreds of thousands of people, and millions of people even, that although we barely reached over a million, if we can believe their numbers, one time, and we reached several hundred thousand repeatedly over the 2 week periods when we've done this, but we're trying to jumpstart many, many more people
to look into this. But often I think what our radio ads are doing, Daryl, is they're causing people for the first time to have a little bit of the brainwashing broken. In other words, even to talk about the Jewish lobby without lowering your voice and being afraid, sounding afraid, that's a new thing for most people in the United States. So you're breaking the brainwashing a little, but that doesn't mean they jump to your side that day, which you know how that goes. It takes a while for people to wake up. So people that I'm hoping people and your excellent audience will, some of them will consider doing this. So let me quickly go through what is the reasonable access law so we can put some meat on it. First of all, it's for federal candidates. That would be Congress, Senate, President, and it applies to them. There's a gray area here, if I can just put an addendum to this. Any station, including cable, that takes advertisements from any candidate in your race, like if you're running for city council, and it's not a federal office, it's a gray area, but they seem to also have to take the ads from all the candidates as long as they take the ads from anybody. So even like the cable is not under FCC, the cable stations, but if they're taking an ad from one of the congressional candidates that I'm running against, it seems they also have to take one from me, but that hasn't been litigated as ironclad as for the FCC licensed stations. But when you're a federal candidate, the FCC licensed stations cannot censor your content. They may not. Even now, profanity has been opened up. There was a candidate for a third-party group called Citizens Party, I think, in 1980, and a guy named Barry Commoner ran for president under that banner, and he started his ad by saying BS, except he said the whole word. You know, he just said BS, and then he attacked Reagan or the Republicans or the Democrats, and the FCC actually stepped in and said, look, you can keep the rest of the commercial, but you got to cut off that first word, because then you couldn't do profanity. Now, They've even made it so people can do profanity. Of course, I don't do profanity, and it's not necessary, but I'm just telling you how wide open this thing is. Then they have to give you reasonable access as any other business. In other words, if you say, I want to run my ads between 12 and 3 p.m. on the Rush Limbaugh show, okay, they cannot say, no, you're not going to run it till 6 p.m. to 12 p.m. that night. No, they have to give you ads on that show. So they also have to give you what they call minimum separation. In the business, that's what they call it. They can't say, well, you got three ads between 12 and 3. We're going to run them at 157, 158, and 159. They can't do that either. They have to give you like an hour space there, or at least a half hour, like they would any other business. So they got to give you the basic things, and you can tape their shows on any other day and see how they treat their other ads, and then you got proof, and they know that, though. They know that going in, if you don't let them push you around. Now, next...
What is the redress if they give you a hard time? Now, this is important because we need to know when we're dealing with these individual companies, especially if they've got a very strict Zionist bent to them, that they're going to balk at the insistence of your placement. What is it that requires them, and what are the consequences if they don't adhere?
Yeah, and they will balk, and I'll go into that a minute. But the consequences in the law, believe it or not, are that the candidate who they censor and offend can file for ownership of their station and should receive ownership of their station. Now, this has never happened because, one, when we said, okay, look, WLW, who was trying to pull our ads the first day, we said, well, I'm going to file tomorrow with the FCC for ownership of your station. Boy, did their attitude change. Oh, no, please don't. We're sorry. We made a mistake, and we're going to let you run. And that saves them. Even if you can prove that they were trying to censor your ads, or they did for a day, if they make it good then the FCC says, well, okay, they made a mistake, but they're trying to make good. So I'm not suggesting that you could just waltz into owning their station, but that's what the law says. If they would say no, look at Condit or Smith or Eric Huffscheid, we're not going to run your ads, then, and they stuck to that, then you could file for ownership of their station. And in the law, once you prove that, you would have to get it. So, now, again, that's a strong penalty, and I'm not suggesting to you that, I'm not suggesting even that the FCC might not start playing foul with some of this stuff, but so far they haven't, because when we went to them in 2002, they backed this up. And they also, and they, so they've been good ever since, WLW and WKRC.
and Clear Channel has been good.
Now, is there a history of case law that supports our access?
Yes, and that is what I wanted to get to here. But let me go through just a few other quick points here. They in the last 60 days of the before the election, so let's say like this year it'll be September 4th to November 4th, 2006.
Yep.
They have to give the candidate the lowest price that they've charged any business in that year. So on WLW, for instance, at night, overnight, 12 a.m. midnight till 5 in the morning, there is a show called The Trucking Bozo, which is aimed at truckers. WLW at night is called a Clear Channel station, not the company, but that was a term, meaning they're allowed to turn their power up at night, where many other stations have to turn theirs down. So it hits 38 states and half of Canada. Okay, so when I was running a minute commercial overnight, we're hitting all the truckers on the road, 38 states in the U.S. and half of Canada. And what do you think I was paying for those ads? I was paying $25 an ad to reach 38 states and all those truckers who were on the road. And that's the most popular show in the United States for truckers, second only to the useless and diversionary Art Bell show. But the point is that that's powerful when you can pay $25. Why did they have to let me pay $25? Because they had sold that to other businesses throughout the year, and in the last 60 days they have to give you the lowest price they charged any other business. Incidentally, somebody might say, yeah, but how about if you want to hit prime time, like 12 to 3 where WLW claims they have 200,000 people listening, or 9 to 12 in the morning where they claim they have 200,000 people listening? Those ads will run $100 on a small station, like a normal 5 to 10,000 watt station. That's a normal AM talk station that reaches about 60 miles in diameter. And on WLW, which reaches during the day about 90 miles in diameter, which there's a number of those clear channel type clear channel stations in the country, you're going to pay between $300 and $350. At least that's the way it was a year ago. So about $100 on the smaller, about $350 on the larger. Now, per spot, but with that spot on WLW, if we can believe their numbers, and they, I guess the companies that pay them believe them, and they are filled up with ads, that you're reaching about 150 to 200,000 people per commercial. Okay.
And that's an Arbitron rating, right?
Yeah. Now, I have to say that while I'm very suspicious of many polls and many of these type of things, the fact of the matter is WLW and all these big radio stations are jam-packed with ads. So the businesses who are paying them would not keep paying them if they weren't getting some results. So, okay. Now, and of course, they have a virtual monopoly, and this is why Clear Channel, the company, is so dangerous. They've bought up almost every major station in the country, so many of them anyway. In Cincinnati, if you walk down to Clear Channel headquarters, there are 7 or 8 stations up on the wall that they own and run out of that one building, where they have 40 broadcasting studios in one building. So this is a communistic-type monopoly more than a free press anymore.
Now, okay. Now let me ask you this now.
Yeah.
See, and one of the big elements to doing this is running for office.
So you have to, to get, if you don't run for office, they will not run your ads. Let me give you an example of that. We have an article that we used on the air on our radio show that happened in 2002 early. The Palestinian, Palestinian group backed up, I believe, in Jordan, were trying to run ads on Clear Channel across the country, which I don't have the ad in front of me, but if the basic gist of it was this. Look, we're human beings too. We're reasonable. We don't want war. We want the American people to listen to our side of the story. They ran that thing about 2 times, and there was an article in the Cincinnati Post we still have, and I need to put up on the website, where the Cincinnati Post, which is the minor newspaper here, but they're the afternoon newspaper, they ran an article by Jim Weiss, Keiswidow, I think his name is, and he explained that according to WLW, in fact, it was the same guy who tried to censor my ads to see if I'd take it. They said, oh, we quit running those ads because we had complaints. Well, the complaints, it turned out, was from a rabbi who said, this is, in the article, he said, basically, this is going beyond the limit of free speech, you know, to let the Palestinians have a say. They censored those ads. So we use that as an example of why we had to run for office and had to use the reasonable access law, because we know that all these, you know, stations censor any ad that they don't like if it's a touchy ad, you know.
Now, how do you run, and what is the cost? And it must be standardized across the country. Each state must So if let's say I want to run for Congress, that you have to do that every 2 years, and there's congressmen across your state running for federal office. And let me first ask, can I run my ad in all states when I'm running in a separate state? In other words, I'm running in, say, Rhode Island. Because I'm running in Rhode Island, can I run my ads in Idaho?
Yes, you can. And that's another incredible advantage to this law. The whole idea here is that the government, the FCC licensed stations in effect, cannot, I mean, they're not government, but they're licensed by the government. They can't tell you, the candidate, hey, this is important, this is important, that's not important. You can't run that information. That's not. And they can't tell you, you should run your ads just in Cincinnati. You can't run your ads in California. You can't run your ads in New York or Florida. So you, the candidate, get to pick not only what your content is, but where you think it will benefit you to run an ad, okay? So that's an incredible aspect of this. If we had the money, even one or two candidates running in the United States could run ads in all 60 major media markets. So you don't even need to have 60 candidates, although for credibility, I would like to see us have 60 candidates do this. You know?
Well, you know what I've thought about, because what we need is a single domino to fall before the rest of them will.
Yeah.
And I thought the idea would be that we would choose a state that is already leaning in our direction, and then blanket the state with facts, blanket that state with information so that it falls the rest of the way. And as goes that first state, many others will follow, because especially a state that is prides itself on living free or dying, and I thought that New Hampshire, and you pointed out, it's one of the only states where half of it still is counted by hand.
It's the only state.
That's right. So what we have there is already a built-in possibility of removing from their control a state, its legislature, and its control in Congress. And I thought, if, you know, we got a guy from California running, we got a guy from Idaho running, got a guy from, and we all bombarded with facts the New Hampshire market. Boy, oh boy, would New Hampshire wake up pretty quick, and I think they would wake up to the facts. Because
especially if you ran a person who was in the outer-lying areas away from Manchester, New Hampshire, so that it would be almost all hand-counted, they would be in a real pickle, let me tell you. And I think you would have a good chance to make an impact there. The rest of the country, of course, they're counting by computer, and that's another story, but something that we can talk about another time. Now, let me get a few other facts in here real quickly regarding the broad-based nature of this law for the protecting the little guy that's running for office. Is not only this, what I've said, but the stations have to bump business ads to put your federal, your congressional or presidential ads on in the last 60 days. If they say, we don't have enough space for your ads and the business ads, they must bump the business ads, because they can still run the business ads after the election. They also have put something in which we've never had enough money to do anything but come and pay and get kind of make a reasonable deal with them, but they've now started something in the last, I don't know how long it's been in, but they have preemptible and non-preemptible ads. Well, the non-preemptible ads are about one-third more expensive, and I've been buying those so that they can't move your ad, but I question the legality of these non-preemptible ads. But what the non-preemptible means is that they can keep moving your thing back day after day if they claim that they have too many ads. So if you don't get a non-preemptible, they can move it from Tuesday to Wednesday, Wednesday to Thursday, this week till next week, this month till next month. Well, George Pataki, the governor of New York, didn't want to pay the full amount, I guess, so he bought a ton of preemptible ads, and they kept moving his ads back. Then he took them to court, and what the court said was, you can keep moving his ads back, but you must play the number he bought by election day. So, in other words, they might bunch him up if you buy preemptible in the last 2 weeks of the campaign or the last week, but if you bought a 200 ads, they still got to pay the 200, play the 200 ads. So even there, the courts, like 2 or 3 years ago, came out in favor of them not being able to play games with the candidates when they put these things on.
Now, what is the cost of running for a federal office?
Well, naturally,
and what is the process of getting on the ballot, not even on the ballot, but just taking out?
You want to qualify to have these rights I'm talking about to put ads on. If you get on the ballot, and I would if I had a lot of money, I would do that. But it's become harder and harder to get on the ballot. I was on the ballot in the late 1979 through the 80s, and it's become harder and harder to get on the ballot because they've made it very difficult. It's hard to find any place to stand except post offices. You can only get 20 an hour, and to run for Congress, it usually takes about 2,000 valid signatures, and to run for president in each state, they do anywhere from 5,000 to 50,000. Senators usually about 5,000. And I looked at that and spending the money, and it had cost me about $6,000 to get on the ballot. And then I looked into it, and I said, hey, all I got to do is pay $85 and sign a piece of paper that I'm running as a write-in, and I can get all these ads on, okay? Now, there's three things about that. One is when the other side was smarting from these ads running that say, he's not a serious candidate. He doesn't want to win. He just is using the law, they said, to get these ads on. So my response was one, first of all, I do want to win. I'd be glad to win if I could win, and I'd be glad to win. But, you know, the guys I'm running against have $1 million in the bank. They're incumbents. And we're raising a few $1,000s to put these ads on. We ended up doing about a two-week pretty saturation campaign in each 2002, 2004, 2005, usually costing in the neighborhood of $10,000, $12,000. And I said, so it's unrealistic that I even – you know, would think that I would win with just spending $10,000 against $1 million when also the media is either ignoring me or attacking me while they're boosting these gutless wonders that are from the Democrat and Republican Party. So I said, secondly, when you count the votes in the open, I will get on the ballot. I'm not going to waste a lot of my supporters' money getting on the ballot like you're running a real election when you're counting the votes in secret, you see. So there's a certain legitimacy to that position. But the third thing I said is, look, even if I know I didn't have a chance to win, even if I didn't want to win, then I still have the right as a candidate to get my message out and get my supporters' message out by qualifying within the law to become a write-in and run these ads. If you don't,
so you
like,
still need 2,000 signatures?
No, you need your own signature. What I did the last in 2002, 2004, 2005 was go down to the Hamilton County Board of Elections in Cincinnati, pay them $85, and sign a piece of paper that I'm a write-in, and I have all the rights as anybody else to run these radio ads.
And that's for federal office.
That's for federal office, Congress. Yeah, and you can. And the president costs a little more than $85 and all that. But I recommend most people would run as Congress because then every ad you run reaches your whole area. However, if you were going to run a congressional candidate in New Hampshire to win, or presidential candidate in the primary, then you would have to. Then it would be more sensible to get on the ballot. Plus, they're counting the votes.
Well, now, how do you write in on these electronic systems to begin with?
Well, all of them still have the ability to. Everyone, you still can get a write-in ballot and write and handwrite in the person's name. So, if you had enough money, there would be some logic in just saying, "Write my name in. Don't. I'm going to be a write-in. Don't vote where they can steal it. Write my name in and let me know about it by a separate postcard." So, no, every system still must allow the person a chance to ask for a write-in candidate and physically write the name out if they're not on the ballot. Every system in the United States still has that.
And how do they count these things? I mean,
well, they claim they just go through them by hand and count them. But I want that's another whole question. What's done with absentees and that is maybe a question for another show when we focus just on vote fraud. But that's a good question. But they have to give you the right to write, even under the punch card system we were using. They have to give you the right to write in the name. Okay.
So now what we're talking about is my listeners right now with $85,
yeah,
which is not a lot of money.
Could vary a little from state to state, but it's about $85.
And they can go down to their county elections office,
right,
and they could say, I want to run for this
Congress
in my district.
Yep.
My district representative's name is so-and-so. I
yep.
want his job.
Yeah.
And you can say, now, what do I need to do? They say, okay, I'm going to be a write-in. And you pay the fee.
$85.
You show your identification. You have to probably prove you're not a convicted felon or something.
Actually, they just let you sign it. And then if somebody has to challenge you if you're a convicted felon. Now, all they do is take your $85 and you sign a piece of paper and you're in.
And do you get a document saying that you are one of these candidates?
Absolutely, because I show that to the station when I start running the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's something to do. And listen to me, Jim.
Yeah.
This is ground-shaking, earth-shaking.
Yeah, I've always thought it was, yeah.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
And we've been groping and looking for things to do. My goodness, this is... geez, and this isn't very costly. Now,
no.
What
now,
I talk
now, let me mention one other thing, because somebody might be saying, although this maybe isn't too big of a consideration, but somebody might be saying, well, we got one congressman. Let's say that somebody lived in Ron Paul's district who's a congressman that does a lot of great things, and he's in Texas. Let's say there's a person listening who lives in Ron Paul's district in Texas, and they say, gee, I don't want to run against Ron Paul. Another incredible part of the law in Cincinnati and in the United States, law in the United States that is in our favor, is that if I live in Texas, I can run in any congressional district in Texas. If I live in Ohio, I can run in any congressional district in Ohio. So as I say to people, I don't know whether Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson lived in the same area in Virginia, and they said, let's make it so we can both run for Congress if we want. But that's the law. I'm in Cincinnati. I can run in Cleveland. I can run in Columbus. I can run in any of the rural counties. As long as I'm a resident of the state, I can run in any county, any congressional district in that state. So if I have a congressman who's any good at all on any issue and you don't want to run against him and there's a real rat in the next district, you just run in the other district.
Perfect.
So very, very flexible, because if I was in Ron Paul's district and in a number of other congressmen, there's about 15 pretty good congressmen, I would not want to be running against them. Don't have to. Just pick one of the districts where there's a real rat running, you know. So now let me get into the law thing here. You said, what is behind this here, okay? Well, the FCC basically made a regulation way back when. I really don't know if it's backed up in a congressional law or not, but the FCC had the power to make this regulation. It might be in a law, but the important thing is this is not a situation where, you know, the American-Israeli Policy Action Committee or whatever they're called, AIPAC or the ADL could go to Congress and say, hey, undo that law. Pass it so that only Democrats and Republicans can run ads. Because what's happened is that this was litigated in 1990s. There was a fail. I actually, as far as I know, Darrell, I was the first person in the United States to, as a third-party candidate, to use this law in 1985 to pound home issues that were totally shocking to the audience. One of them was on computerized vote fraud. The other one we did was on abortion from the pro-life angle.
Now, presenting these ads to the radio station, do you have to do it on disc, CD, computer?
You can do it one, now that there's digital, you can either do it on a CD or you can actually email it to them. Just like an MP3 file. I always gave them a hard disk, though, just so that they couldn't say they didn't get it or anything. And we do it, usually send it by way of a courier, so we got evidence that we have delivered it to them. And
now,
I think,
have you looked into television advertising? I mean, just to...
Yeah, it's the same deal, except that we've never had enough money. See, if you divide $10,000 over WLW and WKRC, that's the two big talk stations here. That's where Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and a lot of other of these guys are on both one of those two stations. Then we barely can run a kind of a saturation around-the-clock campaign in this area with $10,000 to $12,000. One TV ad at prime time, like, let's say, the evening news, local evening news from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., is often running a $1,500 to $2,000 now here, much more in New York or L.A. I would be all for it if I had the money. I mean, obviously, I'll tell you something else. You're raising a good point, because I'll tell you something else. I think I was the largest advertiser on WLW and WKRC, because the candidates that have money all put it into television, because definitely television has a greater impact than radio. However, one of the strategies we're doing with such little money, and believe me, I did everything I could for 2 months to raise money. That's about what came in, and I'm very grateful to all the people that did donate. But what I wanted to say is that our money would be eaten up so quickly in television with that little money that it didn't make sense. And what our strategy was is on the talk radio stations, thanks to Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and others, they've at least developed an audience of politically interested people who are seeking the truth, even though they don't get the truth. They're seeking the truth. And, of course, we're also going up against their heroes. When we go on Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, we're basically telling them these guys are not telling you the straight story. In fact, quite the opposite. So we're hoping to just get the best of the best. Maybe the top 10% of those audiences are going to be sharp enough.
Well, not if my strategy is put into play along with these rules.
Okay.
And I'm telling you again, when we talk about a place like, and then I'm targeting here. New Hampshire or Idaho, or these are small markets.
Yes.
And my idea here is to take one of the small markets. It could even be Montana. We can go to Billings or
sure.
something else. And say, take a small state that we think we have a good base in, and Idaho also has a wonderful base of resistance against the government's lies.
Yes.
And started, you know, carpeting that state with the truth.
Yes.
Now, because they're small states, they don't have huge charges for their advertising.
That's right. That's right.
And that if you are running for a federal office from, let's say Eric, we run Eric from California in his district, and we run you from Ohio.
Yes.
And we say, the heck with Ohio and California. We're going to concentrate our work in New Hampshire.
As long
and,
as
and Jim Condit, Jim Condit for Congress, and here's the truth.
But
and,
remember, I would have to live in New Hampshire. You do have to live in the state you're running in. So wherever you run, if it's Congress.
Now, no, you told me we could. If you're running for Congress, you can run ads across the nation.
No, you can run ads. Okay, sure. Yeah, as long as you're running for a district in Ohio, you can run ads. In my case, you can run ads anywhere in the nation. That's correct.
That's right. So you're running in Cincinnati. It's for a federal office, Congress.
Right.
And you say, but I think that I can get some traction out of my vacationing Ohioans up in New Hampshire.
Or just out of New Hampshire people. Maybe I say I can get more donations and support and more spreading of my message from people in New Hampshire. They can't even evaluate why you think you should.
That's right. Now, Jim starts doing a couple of lead-in things. We can actually coordinate this together and say, look,
sure.
Jim, you hit the ideas about vote fraud.
Yeah.
Eric, you hit the ideas about the lying media.
Yeah.
So-and-so, you hit the ideas about the Israeli lobby.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we get different people saying the whole story and at different chunks,
yeah.
And it wouldn't be terribly expensive because that market is not heavily saturated with charges. It's not New York City.
Right, exactly. And keep in mind, each ad refers into a website. And actually, if it wasn't for that aspect, I don't think this would be as effective because what we're doing is we're going so much against the brainwashing that people have. If we didn't give them a website to go to, the talk show host would mercilessly ridicule us. And that's one of the other things I wanted to go into here. When I've run my ads, especially in 2002, they did not ridicule me. They fell silent. In Cincinnati, for the last 2 weeks of the election, they actually fell silent on national and international issues. Suddenly the bums under the bridge became the big issue. Should we allow bums to stay under the bridge in Cincinnati? All this type of thing. And they avoided the they suppressed discussion. I know from people that called in that wanted to comment on my radio ads, they would not let them on the air. They hold themselves out of this, hey, call in, this is a free talk station. Not all the time, you know. So, that's another point that should be made is that because they know that if they start lying about you and ridiculing you too much and people go to the website, there's a whole bunch of people that are going to say, hey, wait a minute. The congressional candidate isn't the liar. The talk show host is the liar. So they really have to be a little gingerly on how they treat us when you're sending them to a website where they can learn, you know, the type of stuff that you and I have on our websites.
Well, now, the idea here is we've got about 3 weeks before that two-month window opens up here.
That's correct.
I am saying, look, we've got 10,000-plus people that are regular on this show, and I'd say double that number who visit us intermittently.
Good.
And on top of that, we get other people, and, you know, a lot of people do listen on CD. A lot of people
yes.
do listen. Now, we can do this. We can centralize the ideas about how to do it, but the message would be one of many. I mean, look,
yeah.
We'll pick one. Do you want to talk about the control of our Federal Reserve under the Rothschild fortune? Do you want to discuss the idea that our media is completely bought and paid for? Do you want to discuss the fact that AIPAC is the number one contributor to campaigns across the country?
Right.
Whatever a myriad of subjects.
Sure.
I don't care which ones you choose, but we could coordinate this at any level. Now, here's the other problem.
If anyone besides myself is considering it doing this year, and believe me, Daryl, I'm not. I never really want to do this, but I feel like if I don't do this, they got the whole field to themselves. I want people, at least in one area here, and maybe we can do it in more, to hear the other side. But if people want to do this, they got to pretty much check in your own state. But you got to pretty much sign your write-in form by September 3rd, usually about 2 months before the election. You've got to sign to get the end of the race. So I just wanted to throw that
out.
Well,
let's do this immediately then, ladies and gentlemen. There are, you know, there are a lot of people out there always discussing, you know, what do we do? How do we do it? How can we? Well, listen, this is one of the ways that we can do it. Now, the other side of this is what we need some money. Okay,
yep.
So let's talk about money. If we had $1,000 and it was costing $25 an ad on one of your local stations just to get your area saturated, that would be four times 40 separate spots at an evening hour.
Yeah, in the evening hour, yeah. Although my feeling is that you also have to do daytime during the main things to get the buzz going, but yeah, that's right. That would be four. Or in
well,
the
I mean, so if somebody were to raise $1,000, they could at least start, you know, raising some hackles a little.
Well,
bit.
And not only that, if somebody, let's say that somebody, first of all, the one other thing about fundraising, if you are rich, we don't seem to have that problem with most of our people, but and you run, you can put as much money as you want into your own campaign. If not, then people are limited to $2,000 a person, but anything from a dollar on up is good. And if somebody said, look, in fact, I tell you what's happening, this is a real life story. A former Marine out of Arizona called me in 2002, and he said, look, I'll send you five, and this guy was a good guy, he'd helped me before on, you know, non-political things. He said, look, I will send you $500 if you will do what I ask you to. I said, what is that? He said, I want you to put all the ads from this $500 on the stations the kids listen to, and I want you to put it on how the Zionists are going to try to draft the kids to go and fight and die in wars in the Middle East. So I said, fine. So I bought them on these stations where I can't really listen to the music pretty without going a little bit goofy.
Well, the problem is, you know, I'm a jazz lover, so I mean, my station isn't heavily hit during the day.
Yeah, but this was like the WEBN here. I guess they got some of the heavy metal, some of the whatever. All these songs I find it. I think you said on one of your tapes you find it hard to listen to. But this is what the kids listen to, and so I put on about a weekend of ads aimed at the kids. Two things happened from that. I walked into a basketball game here that was from a Christian, being played by two Christian schools. I mean, you know, conservative Christian schools. I had never had a person under 20 ever comment on my ads, even though I'd been running them for a week and a half. I walk in on the last weekend after we started running these ads on Friday night on these kids, heavy metal, whatever they are, type stations, and about four or five kids said, Mr. Conda, we heard your ads on the radio. Well, I knew right away they were listening to stations. Their parents probably didn't know they were listening. But that's why the Marines said to put those on that station. The second thing that happened was that the oldest Jewish newspaper in America, which is in Cincinnati, the American Israelite, one of their reporters called me on the Monday and said, we want to talk to you about those ads you're putting on the kids' stations. Because they're nervous, probably, that we're warning the kids that it's the Zionist Jewish lobby that wants to draft them, that nobody else. It's just that's who wants to draft you and send you. So I said, look, let me tell you something. I said, years ago, I had to talk to the press. I said, unless you're going to let me write an editorial that you'll publish without censoring it, I'm not talking to you. I now talk to people through the Internet, and that's the same as I said to the TV and radio stations, because they've butchered me so much in the past two decades. They interview you for 20 minutes, put on 20 seconds, and then ridicule you, let your opponent talk for 2 minutes. So I say now, look, if you'll let me go on live, like you did for Jerry Springer, you let him go down to the TV station and sit there and talk to the anchor for 2 minutes during the news, and it's live, and people can hear what I'm saying, I'll do it. If not, I'm not talking to you. And we just talk to people through our own ads and through the Internet as a kind of a way to diss, if you don't mind me using a slang term of the kids today, to diss these stations that are so daggone dishonest, you know?
Well, you know, there are even a possibility of finding a couple of Jewish-only stations that are FCC and putting your ads on there.
Sure, sure.
That'll curl some beards, won't it?
Yeah. Now, let me finish real quickly if we got time here on what happened, though, so people understand how ironclad this thing is. And I'm just going to tell you the facts of the case quickly so people it'll put flesh on it for people. A guy who found out about this law on his own, he found it independently from me, but he was an advertising executive, or a guy named Michael Bailey, started using this in 1992, and he used it to show aborted fetuses on the television. He would go into Protestant churches, basically, show his ad and what abortion was, and then he would raise money from that congregation. And I met him and he knew I had done this, he said, well, you're not doing it right. He said, you have to show people what the ad is and say, I will put this ad on if you donate, and then people know what they're donating to. And he says, the way you're doing it is a little too nebulous. So I took that advice from him. So that's why we put up our ads in 2002 on the...
Play a second one for us.
Okay, on the website, and we put that up so that to follow him. But before I play that, let me finish this point about Michael Bailey, because I'm sorry I wandered on you there a little.
Mm-hmm. No, Michael, not a problem.
Michael... He did it in such a shocking way. Though he only ran them like in Indiana where he was running, these ads were picked up from Europe to Japan. Everywhere in the United States was showing these ads to say what the controversy is about. Well, in the same year of 1992, a guy named Daniel Becker in Georgia tried to do the same thing in Georgia. Okay, he picked up on it later in the year. And Becker, the station in Atlanta, said to him, look, you want to run your ads in the day? No. We're going to run your ads from midnight till 5 in the morning because these are too offensive to people. So they did that to him. They actually, and he filed suit immediately. Now listen to this because this is incredible. He filed suit against the Federal Communications Commission, and it took from 1992 to 1996 for the federal court in Washington, D.C. to rule. Would you believe that 300... TV and radio stations came in against Daniel Becker. So there's this guy, Daniel Becker, fighting the FCC and 300 radio and TV stations who wanted to change this law. The court right beneath the Supreme Court, the Federal...
Court of Appeals.
Yeah, Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., they ruled no. The stations, you're 100%, and the FCC, you're 100% wrong. You've got to protect the rights of candidates to put on what they want. Now, the other side did not appeal it to the Supreme Court. So this tells me either there's a fight in the establishment to where they feel until we get gun control, we can't start saying that censorship is okay because the tables could still be turned on us until we get gun control, or that they simply that's one possibility. The other possibility is that the other side just was not confident that the Supreme Court would rule their way, because they, if they lost at the Supreme Court, that would be the ultimate deal. So that's where it sits. So they would have to start a case and go through the local appeals and the Supreme Court to do anything to this law.
But that wouldn't stop them from temporarily stopping you and then getting your ads off and fighting it for three more years.
Well, it might now, though, because since it's already been determined by ironclad federal court law, I can file for the ownership of their station the next day, and that's what I did in 2002, and they started running them the same day that we threatened to do that again. They actually had only pulled them off for about 8 hours on the first day. I think we started running them on October 22nd, 2002. They ran them until 6 p.m., and then I was listening for them. And this brings up another point. We had a fellow friend of mine named Nick Landholt came up here from Kansas and basically slept at my office I had at that time. And we brought in some of these machines from C. Crane Company where you can tape 4 hours at a time. He taped both stations all day long for 2 weeks. We kept changing tapes every 4 hours. We had two machines. And we let the stations know, we're taping to make sure you run these ads. That's another thing. You've got to monitor these stations because they if they can find any way to prevent these from running, they're gonna prevent it. Now here's so that's how ironclad this is. They would have to take a case all the way through up the Supreme Court, and I think it's more likely that they would try to a second terrorist attack and then declare part of martial law that nobody can run any ads critical of the government before they would try to do that. Okay, here's a second ad. This was the this is an ad we did on vote fraud. We did about 11 ads, and I have one more ad if we got time. That's a third.
We do. Go ahead.
It's a third party ad. But here's the vote fraud ad. Here we go.
90% of our votes are going to be counted by only three major corporations in 2004. Listen to what Dr. David Dill, professor of computer sciences at Stanford University, has to say. Quote, why am I always being asked to prove these systems aren't secure? The burden of proof ought to be on the vendor. You ask about the hardware? Secret. The software? Secret. What's the cryptography? Can't tell you because that'll compromise the secrecy of the machines. Federal testing procedures? Secret. Results of the test? Secret. Basically, we are required to have blind faith. End quote from Dr. David Dill. Find this quote in the article it comes from at votefraud.org. Election night has become just another computer game. Paper ballots, hand-counted by you and your neighbors at the close of the election day, is the solution. Elections would be exciting and real again. A citizen's count at sundown. Please go to votefraud.org. That's votefraud.org, paid for by Jim Conda Jr. for Congress 2004.
That's, you know, Jim, they're concise, to the point, and just
and
simple enough to make yeah. make people just sit there and go, wow.
Yeah, and they take a while to write because you do want to take advantage of your – and I may talk a little too fast. Maybe we should slow it down a little, but I'm trying to get – I'm basically aiming at the smartest of those listening and trying to give them enough information to where even the most skeptical, honest person has to say, well, if even – in fact, once somebody called in after one of these after the election was over, and they said, look, if even one-tenth of what Condit said is true, we got a problem. So you want them to think that way, that even if part of your information is true, they better look into it, you know.
Yeah. Well, the final take on this, and we'll do one more ad before the end here, but the final idea here is that, first of all, it's 85 or thereabouts, could be 100 in your area to file. You can file as a write-in. You need to do it sometime before the beginning of September, so you've got 2 or 3 weeks.
You call your Secretary of State and ask them when is the deadline for congressional candidates to file, basically, yeah.
Right. Now, and then you begin by getting at least 1,000, I would say, but a couple of thousand would even be better, and start targeting, if you want to do it in your local area, targeting the evening time and maybe toward the end of your campaign, one or two spot ads that are going to be in good prime time.
Right.
And you could do that with $1,000 or with $2,000, you could actually, maybe, and here's the good thing, maybe that guy had something going there with the young people. Maybe it's time that the young people become deprogrammed about this.
Yes.
And so instead of the $1,000 going to maybe the jazz station, you go to that rock station and say, wait a minute, the next generation needs to know how corrupted the system is and how this Zionist nonsense is killing us.
Yes.
And that might not be, you're investing in the future is what you're doing there.
And I'll tell you something else. The other way, of course, the way that is the most hope to have 60 or 70 candidates raise at least $10,000 to $12,000 each is to use the Internet. Most of my donations came either from a mailing list that I have built up over the past 30 years. I got about 600 good people on it, roughly, which isn't much, but they're good people. And also I have my email list, which is about 1,200 or 1,300 voluntary sign-ups. But see, that goes to a lot of people like Henry the Celt and other people who's an old 80-year-old guy up in Alaska. These people got their own list. So I know when I've written a good e-wire that people like, it can get around to 50 to 100,000 people. So from the Internet and from that mailing list is where I raise it. But I'm going to have going up soon a website that's going to have video on it for the first time where when people come in, this is going to be dead. And I did this wrong in the past. I'm just learning about this. The people that really know what they're doing that I've been able to contact said, look, if you want them to do anything, buy a book, do anything, you have one page up dedicated to what you're doing. You come in, you talk to them on this new technology, a three-minute video ad, and then you have them make a decision right there. So I'll put up a page that'll have one of the commercials, and then it'll take the people to make a decision right away, yes or no, and then people can look at that and copy it, because what I'm going to do is based on the principles, not of myself, because I bumble around just trying to do the best I can, but I'm using the principles this time of people that have proven that they can sell both information and hard products on the Internet. So anyone that can come in and look at that page and then copy it for themselves, because I do believe that even if we had 60 or 70 candidates and you did this right, there's plenty of people out there to raise at least 10 or 12,000 for each one. And then in most areas, they're going to be able to do a 2 or 3 week pretty saturation campaign on their talk radio stations. What I would love to see have happen, rather than us just hitting 1 million people once and 200,000 people repeatedly, I'd rather see us hitting 100 million people once and 20 million people repeatedly, and that, I think, would only cost in the range of of about 60 candidates raising 10 or 12,000 each. So we're covering a lot in what I just said, but there is ways to do this, because somebody might be saying, gee, I'd like to do this, but I'm not sure how I would raise the money, which is the hard part, and we will demonstrate that so people can look at it. Now, if there's only a few or only myself again who is running this time and people want to help, then we can run ads wherever they want us to. If somebody says, I'll donate $1,000, but I want you to run the ads in New Hampshire or whatever, you know, the big year we should focus on, not that we shouldn't do this year, but, you know, 2008 is where we really want to.
I don't think we've got that long before martial law.
It may not.
And that's why I think we need to do this immediately.
And I think everyone should do it immediately.
I think we have to, Jim. And
yeah.
I'll tell you something. I think within the 2-year time frame, we may be looking at Emperor Bush.
Yeah, and the reason we want to do it this time, and I agree with you 100%, I'm being a little bit diplomatic here, but I've been begging people to do this. And the reason we want to do it is because the more that we get out to the public, the slower they have to move. I honestly think that the fact that not only in my ads, of course, because I'm just one area, but all the people who've been saying this was an inside job have actually put off the second terrorist attack in the United States. I think they wanted to do it by now, but they're really they got to make sure that if they do it, they don't have millions of people say, well, wait a minute, this looks like it's an inside job. They got to try to do it in a way that it looks perfectly believable as the Arabs doing it. You know.
Well, so let's do this. Let's do the last ad right now. And
okay.
can you cue that up for us?
I can. And let me quickly say that you may not need to hear this, and we probably don't have time. But the last section that I had was on the actual experience that we ran into, and that isn't necessary to cover. We could cover it another time. But this is what we call what anybody would call a third party ad. Okay. Now, if I were going to do a third party ad with Eric, for instance, then he would say, "Are you there?"
Yeah.
He would say, come to IamTheWitness.com or come to Huge Question. Mainly, they should. What I think is effective is your radio programs. People should download them, because radio and TV on the Internet are going to be much more effective than the written word. So anyway, this is a third-party ad. We did one with James Ennis, the commander of the Liberty, which you did a show with.
Yeah.
We did one with Rania Masri, who was a Lebanese gal who did a tremendous job on two commercials we did before the Iraq War invasion of 2003. This one is with a former AP reporter with the New York Bureau of the Associated Press. This one was actually the one we had to fight the most to get on the air, because they were trying to censor this ad. They would pretend they had goofed it up and put one of our other ads on. Many people may recognize this fellow, and he did a tremendous job on this commercial. So here is, let's see. Here it is. Here we go. Now I hope we get the volume right again. Here we go.
Michael Hoffman, you are a former reporter for the New York Bureau of the Associated Press, and you've just published a shocking new book, The Israeli Holocaust Against the Palestinians.
The Israelis themselves are guilty of a Holocaust. The Israelis regard the Palestinians as subhuman and target them for a final solution of total eradication. Those who pretend that Israeli atrocities have not been systematically perpetrated against Palestinians are engaged in Holocaust denial. Sharon's forces killed 20,000 civilians in Lebanon in 1982, and they are doing it again in Palestine in 2002. Hundreds of children are killed every year by the Israelis. Sharon's troops killed 9 children last July, and 16 civilians were killed by the Israelis October 7th. Israel is guilty of state-sponsored terrorism.
For the full story, go to realnews247.com and click on Hoffman Lenses. Email your contacts nationwide to go to realnews247.com. Pay to Junior for Congress.
Now, Jim.
Yes.
Did you get big bumps from this?
When you're saying big bumps in what?
In your numbers.
These were all running. Everyone I played for you was running 2002, except for the original one. I don't know what happened in 2004. See, we had in 2002, as I told you, we got 22,000 new visitors. However, let me tell you something about that year, which was not a problem in the recent years. Our webmaster had fallen gravely ill, and there was a lot of problems with our website that year, but we still got the 22,000 hits. Like I said, I wanted a million, and but again, I don't, you know, so we got 22,000, and I didn't know, I'm pretty much a one-man operation like you with some helpers. I need to learn how to monitor our websites when we do it this time, so I see exactly how many comes in. I don't even know how to go into my back door and look at how many visitors are coming through. So,
well, check on this then. Are you running again this year?
Yes, I'm going to go, because I don't. If I'm the only one, I don't want the Zionists to have the field all to themselves again at all. So we're going to at least fight them in this area again.
Well, I can't run from France.
No,
so.
You can't. No.
No, and but. But Eric or someone else out there in the listening audience, we're going to find people to run.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to do some. And I'm leaning toward, and I'm hoping you can give some thought to this idea.
Sure.
Of doing something about getting one of the states to fall, and I'll tell you why that's important. In the Constitution, a state has the right to bar federal officials from their state.
That's right.
and the county sheriff has the right to bar FBI people and bar other people from coming into their state or county.
Absolutely.
And if we were to be able, were able to take back a single state, and that was the first domino to fall, we could begin to restrict their access to that state at the same time.
Yes. And someone could say, no IRS agents are allowed to harass citizens in my county, for instance.
That's right. And we could actually, you know, start looking at ways of deconstructing their control mechanism in a state like New Hampshire or in a state like Iowa. Idaho, I mean.
Yes.
Now, because those, or even Alaska, because the market is small, but...
Yes.
Now, what we need is a domino to fall, I think, Jim.
Yep.
And if we could get one domino to fall this year, one state to say we've had it, and because New Hampshire's still counting half of their state by hand, that would be the place I think we should key into.
I think so, yeah.
And I'm going to ask my listeners, if you want to donate to Jim, let's see if Jim will acquiesce to doing some ads in New Hampshire.
I certainly would, or you know, if I'm the only one, or if someone else wants to do it. But yes, I'm open to any strategy that's effective. Well, the one reason we restricted ourselves to the Midwest is because we could monitor to make sure they were running them, and this is where I was from.
I got to be honest with you, I've got a big enough audience that I could have people all over New Hampshire monitoring.
Well, that'd be great, and we can tell them how to do it. Now, what I would say, Daryl, is that we for right now, if people want to go into realnews247.com, they can click on our action plan there and donate. What I really want to do, though, and we'll talk to you about this.
They're going to have to make sure they're going to have to give their name and everything when they donate, because this is actually a federal election,
now,
right?
Okay, and for right now, for the next few weeks, they don't, because what they're doing is buying a newsletter, and it only becomes that way when it's a federal. When I get the federal election page up, then yes. I have to report every donation that comes into the federal campaign. So then they give their name. But there's some people who say, hey, I don't want to give my name, so they will donate to the newsletter, and then if I have money left over, which I usually do, I can personally donate that money into my campaign, as Steve Forbes did. But naturally, I'm always, you know, we always tell people that if they are willing to do so, donate to the federal campaign first, and I hope to have that page up hopefully within the next week so that people would be able to donate straight to the federal campaign.
Well, it's a wonderful idea, and you know, we, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we've met our goal for the month. We didn't ask for any donations for a while, and boy, you guys really surprised me. I want to thank everybody out there. They're been some help. You know, we've only got a $400 or $500 operation a month here on the French Connection, and we met that. And what we need to do now, ladies and gentlemen, is really start putting ourselves to work here. Now, if you could, with the 10,000 people, if every one of you gave $10 to doing this, we could really do something.
Let me say something that I said on the last show that we did, and let me say it again. And you don't have to say yes or no, just think about it. I can set up on our website so that we can tell where donations come from. So, for instance, if there's a way we could queue in so that people that were donating through your efforts, and I could, well, they go through a link that lets me know this is through your efforts, we can pay, and some people, hear me out here, people that are listening, we could pay 30% of what is donated to my campaign back to Eric as a consultant, or you as a consultant, just like...
Well, we don't want that.
Well,
you know, see, we got small... See, this is grassroots stuff, and
okay.
I'm not doing this for the money.
All right. Well, I was just trying to help you stay... You know,
well,
expand
no,
your
reach that's, too. But that's not... See, that, you know...
Well, maybe the way to do it is we just heavily advertise for people to go into your site, pull down your radio shows, and then from there you'll get more donors, maybe. Because that's one of the things we could do in the campaign is say, go listen to all these radio shows, you know.
Well, the bottom line is that, you know, this whole, I mean, they may shut me down over here and at some point and have me behind bars like Ernst Zundel or something, and I may need a legal defense fund is what I may need.
Sure.
But at the same time, my point being here is that this is a hands-on grassroots possibility that each and every one of us can try out in our own market. Again, the strategy I think is to take one of our states back.
Yeah.
And I think because it would get it would have to be covered nationwide if we were to take New Hampshire back or Idaho or
They you know how the media they will ignore you until they have to attack you.
But they wouldn't be able to ignore the fact that a state fell on them.
That's
and they wouldn't be able to ignore the fact that every IRS agent in New Hampshire was kicked out.
They won't even ignore a bunch of ads hitting because then they know. See, once they know, that's the other beauty of the AM talk show strategy. Once they know the people are hearing it, they have to try to give the people their own spin on how kooky this is, you know, that type of thing. So they have to attack you, and that's progress. If I could mention quickly, you know, Connecticut has that thing where Lamont has
He seems like a bad guy to me.
He's a wet noodle and a bad guy probably as well. However, for all the people up there that are are so mad at Lieberman for being such a war hawk, if there was enough money, I was thinking of, and New Hampshire, I think, bleeds over into Connecticut, his supporters need to be told that demand a hand count. If you don't demand a hand count, Lieberman will be put in again because he's one of the top Zionist Jews. In just that way, that would hurt him bad. We probably won't have the money to do that, but that would hurt the other side bad because then even if Lieberman would win, all of the Lamont supporters would be thinking, gee, did Lieberman win or not? But anyway, that's just the thought that I had in thinking about that race up there because they're going to put Lieberman in by computer. They got a three-way race going up there, so they're still planning to save him.
Oh, yeah, they're going to cheat him in. Like they're going to cheat it. They get, you know, come on, they're doing it across the country. So,
sure.
Look, we're going to do another show soon, probably next Monday, and there'll be an update on this information. There'll be an update on the subjects we've discussed in our past broadcasts, as well as more information about the
precinct strategy.
Well, the precinct, yes, and that's
how
the next
organize.
Thing.
I'm going to use the ads this time to. I think we're going to focus at the end on telling them to get into action and attend their county meeting, and we'll talk about next Monday why that is going to send the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and all them into emergency session if we can just get that to catch on across the country, that everybody's going to at least attend their county organizational meeting in the Democrat and Republican Party in May of 2008. We want to have
2006.
Actually, the next one of the precinct meetings is in 2008. It's already over for this
year. I'm telling you, I don't think we got that much time. That's why this is so urgent.
We may not, except the precinct meetings already happened 5 months ago across the country. They happened like February through May in all the counties. They're already over for 2006. So the next chance we have is May 2008, around there. And I understand what you're saying, but all we can do is the best we can do. But certainly the urgency is there for everything we need to do.
Well, what we can do maybe is talk about how to find out who our people are that have been put into that position.
Yeah.
And we can start sending them letters saying we're watching how you count, what you count, when you count, and what you do.
That would be
and
great.
We're aware of what you're doing, and we're aware of the criminal nature of the count process, and we're watching.
We can go into that, and say something people can do this year, and we hope to have up on the website soon things they can pages they can download, take to a place like Kinko's and blow up double. But it would be great if at all these precinct, at the 2006 election, if there were people standing out with signs saying this is a fraudulent computer count. I would even urge the people that got the guts to do it say three Zionist Jewish computer companies are fixing this election by computer. I mean, that's the type of signs they need to see because then they have to really worry. When they know people are trained on who is responsible, they've got to slow up. They've got to not be too as obvious as they were, you know. So we can talk about things people can do this year as well.
Well, thank you, Jim, for being so informative today. Again, we're going to do another show next week. So, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. I want to thank you all for tuning into this broadcast today, and Jim Condit for doing his part in informing. And until the next time we get together, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying, be well. Bye bye now.